Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is podcast number 220. This week, St Anthony returns to the reins of the podcast with the former Celtic player guest in the form of Mike Conroy. Those of us who grew up attending Celtic games in the 70s and 80s will remember Mike as part of a very strong midfield. Born in Johnson, Mike signed for Celtic in 78, making his debut in April 78 in a 4-1 defeat at Easter Road to Hibs. Mike made 89 appearances for Celtic, although, as the Celtic Wiki points out, some websites say slightly fewer. But his need to move on to Hibernian was brought about by Celtic having such a strong midfield with the likes of Murdo McLeod, Tommy Burns, previous guest of the podcast, Dom Sullivan, was also at the club at the time. And as mentioned with Dom Sullivan, there was the emergence of Paul McStay, in addition to the wingers of Davy Provan and previously Johnny Doyle. So, sit back, relax and enjoy St Anthony with Mike Conroy.
It's my pleasure here to be joined by Mick Conroy today, and we're going to have a wee chat about Mick's career and see what he's been up to in the years since he's left Celtic. But as always on the site, I'm just going to ask Mick to start off, who was your first Celtic hero and what's the first Celtic game you remember?
Two heroes really, if I'm being honest. Obviously Jimmy Johnson was huge at the time, and Bobby Lennox. I used to go to games and look at the pace of Bobby Lennox and just be fascinated with how he just knocked it past people and could score goals. And the entertainment that Jimmy used to show us was tremendous. And the first game that I remember going to watch was a Morton and Celtic game.
Capello.
And there's a little wall at Capello, and I can barely just remember just seeing over the wall. And Celtic, I'm sure, were 3-3, and Morton got it back to 3-3.
Oh God! So it was, that must have been before Jock.
No, I think it was. Yeah, it was hard to say.
Mid-60s,
64, maybe 65. But it was a good match. That's the first one I remember. And I remember going to a Celtic Morton game years later at Hampden. Celtic won 7-1. I was delighted because most of my friends in the class were Morton supporters, and I could go back and
slag them
and hear them a good doing over. That's right.
But was it a big thrill in later years when you got to play with Bobby?
It was. And you know, that I remember even when I was 9 or 10, me and my pal went and picked up a telephone book and looked through the book and looked for Al Lennox stock quotes, and we phoned the number up. And Bobby was in there, and we just asked.
Was it his number?
It was his number, yeah. And we asked, you know, when would he be in? Because I wanted to ask him for some training tips. And it must have been his wife who took the call. And he says, "Well, he's away training just now." So years on, I've never told Bobby that, obviously, but years on, I was kind of thinking that, you know, that how life goes. It's incredible there at 10.
That's fate, isn't
15
it?
Years on, you're playing with
a teammate.
I mean,
no many people listening to this might appreciate that your dad actually played for Celtic in the 50s. So there's two Mike Conroys. Obviously, was your dad, then there was you. And what I remember is my dad had a friend who was really knowledgeable about Celtic, and he always maintained there was two players in the 50s, your dad and Johnny Higgins, who got injured, who would have been great Celtic players if it wasn't for injury.
Well, my dad got a bad ankle injury. You know, but he said himself that when he had a half-back line of Peacock, Steen and Evans, which was there for almost the duration of the 50s, he was struggling to get in, you know. But he didn't want to go anywhere else except Celtic, and it was part-time throughout his career. And when it finished up in 1960 under doctor's orders, really, that he didn't want to go and try anywhere else at all, you know.
His heart was doing it.
It was advised, I think, to retire, you know. And, you know, that he'd been at Celtic, played part-time, but mostly reserve football.
Mm-hmm.
I think he made about a dozen appearances. They said, the players at the time were obviously top quality, Bobby Evans and Bertie Peacock, and then Big Jock was centre-half. Mm-hmm. So
if you push forward a wee bit then to your own career, you signed for Celtic in 1978 for Port Glasgow Juniors. Now this was still at a time when junior football was highly rated, and you could actually get the top division clubs would sign players for the juniors far more than what they do these days. So how did it come about?
Well, I had trials at United, Dumbarton and Kilmarnock, and I got a phone call on a Thursday night to say that Sean Farrell was coming up to watch Port Glasgow in Lanark, up in Lanark, and I did okay that day, and he invited me down on a Tuesday, 14th of March at 7 o'clock.
Still remember the date?
I still remember the date, the time, the lot. I still remember going through into the president's room where all the trophies were, and my dad was there, myself, Sean Fallon, my junior manager Bill McFarlane, and Billy Barber, the local press man.
The Big Jock was still being the manager then, wasn't
it? Big Jock was the manager, but it was Sean that did the signing there. And I was thrilled to sign. I didn't even know how much I was getting at the time. I just signed the papers. And I said I'd be training next morning, if that's okay. And he said, well, you know, you're part-time. I said, well, I do a bit of work part-time.
Mm-hmm.
As a youth assistant down in Greenock. So it would suit me to train in the mornings. I says, okay, we'll see you in the morning. And as we walked out, he put his hand on my shoulder. And he said to me, you know, that your dad was a good player. And he said, but, you know, signing for Celtic's the easy bit.
Mm.
He says, the hard bit is playing the first team. And, you know, that was great to sign, but I knew there was still big challenges ahead.
What I can recall at the time was quite vividly how quickly it was for you coming for the juniors right into the first team, and there was hardly any bedding in period. I mean, you must have made your debut within a matter of weeks.
Well, I never played reserve football for 2 weeks after I signed in the 14th of March. I never played a game for 2 weeks for whatever reasons, and I played three reserve games in 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I did reasonably well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the very first game I remember, one of the reserves at Celtic Park, and I was number 10, and beside me was Paul Wilson, and the other side was Alfie Conn. But I remember pulling the jersey over my head and having a shiver down the back of my spine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of strolled up to the corner of the dressing room where there was a big mirror. I just wanted to make sure that it was
all right
inside this jersey, you know. And that was my first game. I think we won 3-1 that day, that night, actually.
So your debut was an eventful game. It's a game I remember well, because I was at Celtic Park that day for a schools game between Scotland and England, and the scores kept coming in on the radio, and as it happened, we got a bit of a doing. We got beat 4-1 Easter Road, and if you're interested, that it's actually on YouTube. You can see the game on YouTube now. If you key in Hibs Celtic 1978, and you see your goal on your debut. Wasn't it a great debut? But because we get beat, but you must have been thrilled getting a goal.
As you say, it wasn't great getting. But you know, I think the goals were kind of basic errors.
They were terrible goals. See when you see it in the computer.
Yeah.
Dreadful. Tommy Burns was left back that day, and God rest Tommy, we loved him to bits, but he was never left back.
No, he wasn't. And after the game, I remember Jock kind of...
Can you remember him missing a penalty? I never knew that. He missed a penalty that day.
No.
It's only something I found out recently.
No, I
don't ever remember Tommy taking a penalty. No.
I remember Jock having a go in the dressing room after the game. And you kind of sit with your hands on your knees, looking at your football boots, hoping you're not going to get lashed, you know. But I escaped the lashing. Two or three got it though. And in fairness to Jock, he kept me in the team for the rest of the season. I think there were 5 games left this season, and he kept me in the team, and You know, I just kept working hard. That wasn't a great Celtic team, as you can imagine. But all I wanted to do was to keep playing and doing my best, you know.
So within a matter of weeks, Jock had moved on, and Billy McNeil had moved in. Were you concerned at that time that new manager, you know, here's me just in the door, and they might not fancy me? And...
Yeah, I think they're always concerned, you know, that you want to go and impress the new manager. And it started with experience. It definitely started that season with experience and more or less kind of challenged the young boys to force their way in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which
he made it clear for the beginning that he was going to bank on the youth, though. I mean, when you look back on it, certainly Big Roy, Tommy, George McCluskey, yourself, you know, there was a wee nucleus. I know these were all just boys at the time, but you know, it was a good foundation for a team to build on.
Mm. Well, I remember the pre-season games, you know, that they played experienced players there. And even Jim Lumsden, who was there as a youth team coach, played in a game, you know, so that it was just trying to get buried in.
Did you play in Jock's testimonial?
I don't think I did, no.
No, I think he played the more experienced guys day.
Yeah. You know, but definitely when Jock moved on and Billy came in, then obviously the challenge is there presented again, you know, to go and prove the manager that you're worth a shot, you know. And until you get a shot in the first team, you know, you've got it all to prove again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think he threw me in at a League Cup tie at Tannadice.
You scored, didn't you?
And I scored with a volley.
That was a cracker.
Yeah, it was good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the 1-3-2, mm-hmm. and that kind of, you know, I played well that night. And again, I wasn't even sure that I was going to play, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he threw him in and I did okay.
So your first big game would have been a matter of days after that when we played Rangers at Celtic Park.
That's
your first All-Firm game of the season. It's a benchmark of how the season's going to go, and you know, we're hoping to.
Well, again, I wasn't expecting to play. I remember on the Friday being in a squad of 15, which I was delighted about. You know, there were some good players there as well. You know, Alfie Conn was a 50-50. Mm-hmm. I think Roddy McDonald, was a 50-50. And I was kind of looking and saying, well, you know, will I go on the bench or not? But when I reported to Celtic Park at 10:45, it was a noon kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got handed a brown envelope with a number on the top of it, and it was 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't too sure whether I'd been given the wrong tickets or not. But I went into the treatment room, and Alfie was getting treatment, and I said, are you playing, Alfie? And they said, no. And just in that, John Clark came in and said, look, you're starting today, you know. So I had no real time to get nervous. Mm. In fact, I was looking forward to it.
So Alfie gave you a wee bit of advice about Alan McDonald?
He did, yeah. Billy's instructions were quite clear to me. You know, like, Alex is a knack of scoring against Celtic.
Mm. He was a good player, McDonald.
Yeah, he was
a good player.
Yeah, and Alfie Conn said to me, he said, look, the only way you're going to get respect against this guy is let him know you're around the place. You know, that by fair means or foul, let him know you're there, you know. And you know, it was a real physical, robust, Old Firm game. But, you know, I think that day we won 3-1, is that right?
3-1, yeah. Peter Latchford saved a penalty.
Peter saved a penalty kick.
That's what he did.
But that game passed so quickly. I remember saying to the referee, I think there were maybe 25 minutes to go. I says, how long we got left? And he says, four minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, where's it all gone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that was the only time in the game that I felt that I was getting a little bit tired. But it just passed so quickly. And obviously scoring early suited us.
We were two up about 15 minutes that day.
It gave us a lot of confidence.
That's right.
You know? I really enjoyed that game. And, you know, I think I proved to the manager then, you know, that I was capable of going into big games.
Mm-hmm.
Having played at Tannadice, scored at Tannadice and done reasonably well against Rangers, so that was it. You know, I was there and up there and running, but you couldn't be complacent in that Celtic team. There's so many good players.
So the 78-79 season, we made a great start, as you touched on there. You know, beating Rangers and we went a good run, and then it got to the October, November, December period. We could barely win a game.
Yeah,
but it was one extreme to another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I remember we lost it. We lost it. Tynecastle. I missed a game through a hamstring tear, and Billy was none too pleased, you know. He laid it on the line to the entire team. That performance wasn't good enough, that we had to raise the standards, you know, and he just brought in David Proven and Martin McLeod, which I think were vital signings. Mm-hmm. You know, there were three things that year that I felt, you know, when you look back on it, was the signing of David Proven and Murdo. Mm-hmm. The winter freeze-up that came, and really...
That saved us, didn't it?
It really did save us, because we're in a bad run, as you mentioned there.
We would never have won the league if it hadn't been for...
No, and with the freezing, Billy took us away to Estoril in Portugal, where we had really got to know each other. Players got to know each other. We got to know our kind of roles and responsibilities.
Did you realise that Estoril was where Celtic had stayed in Lisbon in 67?
Well, I did realise that. I think that's why Billy took us there,
because every time I read that, I think it must have been some memories for him and John Clark.
And we were there, and I don't think it was really about the field time playing Estoril. I think it was more about the bonding. And we went back, and I don't think we lost a game. Plus, we had the added bonus of Bobby Lennox coming back from the USA, you know, and of course Bobby was a great hero of mine, you know, as I said earlier, and I think it gave us all a lift. Mm-hmm. We went on a terrific run, I think starting from February.
Some of the games were odd, because we played, I always remember, but we played Partick Thistle, and because there was a big backlog of fixtures, we were trying to catch up. We played Partick Thistle on a bank holiday Monday, which you wouldn't normally get, and we played St Mirren at Ibrox on a Friday night, which a lot of people remember vividly, because, you know, not only playing at Ibrox, but on a Friday night.
Yeah, well, that Friday night, was due to play St Mirren. I had to miss a game. I couldn't get myself out of bed. I had some sort of virus, and I had to phone in sick, you know. I never played at that game, and we had a game scheduled for the Monday night also.
That's right, Hearts.
So I felt better on the Sunday, and I phoned Doc Fitzsimmons and said, look, you know, I think I might be okay to report as a Monday. So Billy had phoned on the Monday and said, okay, like, come up, you know, you'll be in the squad, you know. But he never mentioned that Tommy Burns had picked up an injury on the Friday night against St Mirren. So again, I wasn't really expecting to play in that game. I think the team that had won that game at Ibrox against St Mirren would start against Hearts. But Tommy had an ankle injury, and he was ruled out. And I remember the team talk, but I said, one change, Michael comes in for Tommy, on we go. And I think that was a game that we never played well. But
here's the funny thing, because I never missed a home game that season, right? I remember this vividly. And I don't know why, I can't recollect why I wasn't at the game, but I remember the 9 o'clock news was on, and I'm waiting for the result, because in any days you didn't have the access to information you get now. And I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and eventually the guy in the news says, what about football games, English First Division, English Second Division? And I'm thinking, well, come on. And then he says, Scottish Premier League, Celtic 1, Hearts 0. And I remember when he said Celtic 1, my heart skipped a beat, because Hearts were a poor team that got relegated that season. And everybody was banking on us getting 3, 4, 5 against them. And when he said Celtic 1, my heart skipped a beat, and then he went Hearts 0. And I thought, oh, thank God. You know, because that would have, it wouldn't even have went in the last game if that had happened.
The last game, that's right. You know, I think the last four games, I think we had to win the last four games, you know.
Some of them were tough, I know.
They were tough games, tough games.
Yeah. I had to come from behind in a lot of the games. There was a lot of games that it was fighting spirit was bringing us through.
Yep, and I go back to that bonding session in the Estoril, you know, when the players really got to know each other, and you know, we kind of knew our strengths and weaknesses, and, you know, our roles and responsibilities in games. All that began to bed in. And the character, of course, was there to see at the end of it, you know.
The other thing that's worth mentioning as well, Danny made his return. He missed a good chunk of the season, and he came back around about March, and I always remember feeling that Danny was a talisman somehow. If he came back, everything would be alright.
Yeah.
You know, and to a certain extent, that was true.
Absolutely true. You know, Danny was a fantastic player.
Just his presence.
Yes, his presence. What he did, good decisions, and you know that. You know, if he felt he needed a word, it would be a quiet word. You know, but it's terrific knowledge of the game, Danny. You know, and you know. was a great personality in the dressing room. He'd done so much, you know. And we all had respect for Danny. Of course, Bobby was there as well, and Bill and John. So we didn't, you know, there was no shortage of experience around us, you know, for the young boys to buy into.
So that brings us up to the 4-2 game then. And I know that we were talking earlier, and you were saying that you remember driving to the game with Davy Proven. Davy was a wee bit apprehensive.
Davy picked me up as normal. I had no car at the time.
So you're coming for...
I'm coming from Glasgow. Davy's coming from Gourock. David picked me up about 5:15, and we headed out of Port Glasgow, you know, and on the left-hand side as we come out was the pitches where we played as young boys. David played with Port Glasgow Rovers, all Red Ash pitches and mud. David played with Port Glasgow Rovers, and I was a year younger than David, and I'd been playing with the Holy Family, Port Glasgow Hibs, and latterly Port Glasgow Youth Club. But we had great times on those pitches, and we mentioned it going up towards Glasgow, that, you know, that we played on those pitches hoping that someday we could be involved in a game of this magnitude. And as we, you know, we're quite relaxed, and as we got closer to Glasgow, I think the nerves began to kick in. David mentioned that he'd played in 2 for him games. We'd lost one in the semi-final of the League Cup, and we lost one at Hampden just 4 or 5 weeks before it.
That was the night Jim Casey got the own goal, really unfortunate.
That was the semi-final,
that was a sore one.
Yeah, they were a poor game as well, played at Hampden, at Rangers 1-1-9, I think McDonald bundled one into the net.
We never turned up that day.
We never played at all. But me and David convinced each other, you know, that if we played well, we would win, you know. And I don't think there were any fear in us, really, except we certainly weren't, had no fear of any opponents.
I done a wee bit of research, as you know, and what really surprised me was just how young these were. I mean, apparently Big Roy was only 20, Tommy was 22, George was 22, you were 21, Murdo was 21, and Davey was 22. And when you looked at the average, Rangers are a real experienced team at the time. And I think Bobby Russell would have been the only guy that you could maybe say was inexperienced in their side. And when you look at the average age of your team, the average age of their team, we were giving up a lot, you know.
I don't think we ever had any fear of any opponent. I think the fear came from letting the supporters down, maybe letting the manager down and your teammates, but definitely no real fear of the opponents. It was you know, that we felt if we played well, that we would win the game, you know.
So what about the actual game then? What's your recollection there?
The game itself was a beautiful Monday night. We didn't know that the cameras and
The infamous strike.
You know, we weren't aware of that, really, you know.
Neither were we, funny enough, we were standing there.
We were out, and we dominated large parts of the game, and Rangers opened the score, and Cooper made his way down the right. And
wee McDonald again, eh?
Wee Alex. I just caught him over my right shoulder, and I went to near post to try to cut out the near post cross, and he must have checked. And as the ball went past me, I thought, well, that's behind the 2 is. And I just heard the net rippling, and said, oh, he's managed to.
I was right behind that. That was a sore one.
So we played well. Well, first half, we tested Peter McLeod. I think we hit the crossbar as well. Rangers almost scored a second on half time. Danny kicked off the line, I believe, but we were in at half time, and there were no sense of panic in the dressing room. Billy was calm, you know, saying that he's played well, your chance will come. Don't need to panic, there's no need for panic. Of course, we went out, and Doyle gets sent off then. There was real panic, to be honest with you. Once Doyle went off, there was a 15 minutes in that game, and it was just madness. It was like the OK Corral. There were people turning up in positions that you wouldn't believe. And
it was almost like schoolboy football, wasn't it? There was no set position.
There's no strategy or anything. Everything went out the window. Big Roy scored the equaliser, got it 1-1. Billy took me off and sent Bob Lennox on. But, you know, he very quickly said to me, said, we need to win. And I said, no problem at all. I said, if any guy's going to come on to win it, it would be Bobby.
There's a thing worth touching on, because you were essentially a defensive midfield player.
Yes, midfield player, yeah.
And Billy's took you off and brought in Bobby Lennox, who was an attacking player. And at the same time, Rangers took off, well, I'm right, my brain's here. I think it was Davy Cooper, and they brought on Alec Miller.
Right.
And you know yourself, Alec Miller wasn't an attacking player. He was there to stop people, not to create. And they'd done the opposite. They almost went into a shell, but it really suited us.
It did.
Because, you know, we could have been there for the 10. Yeah,
and when I looked at the game, you know, Bobby did stretch him that extra 5 yards, and it gave Murdo and Roy room in the middle of the pitch to control the game. It was hard work, it was a slog. But it was the way the game went, you can write it, you know. You can make it up, really.
So on the bench, what would have been happening on the bench, you know,
George scored in
that period?
I remember Neely Morgan, I think, or was it Frank Connor? Once George scored, you know, we went 2-1 up and Russell come up and Frank Connor was saying, look, we'll get it all right, you know, then Russell scored, you know. And Big Billy was kind of...
Because normally did we win, we actually we climbed the mountain, if you like, and then we had to do it again,
Billy kind of referred to it. He said, Frank Connor was adamant, no, we'll see this through, you know. Billy said something like to the tune of, he's making the hand for his Frank, he's making the hand for his, the big man up there, he's making the hand for his. But we went again, and across from the right, it deflected, I think, off Colin Jackson, and it kind of bundled into the net.
Jackson claims that the reports of the time say they headed it in the net. He says it wasn't that graceful. He says that it actually come up, hit him in the shoulder,
right,
into the net, and he says he knew absolutely nothing about it. And then, as I said, I was behind that goal, and that ball rolled, and it rolled, and it rolled, and Big Roy's chasing it, and I think Ali Dawson was chasing it, and it ended up, all three of them ended up in the net. But as long as the ball was in, that was it.
I mean, bits of that game that I remember, with 4 or 5 minutes to go, and the ball being down our left back position, and David Provan came across the pitch and sweeping it back to Big
Billy. But he shouldn't have been.
And we're saying, what is David Provan doing in our left back position? You know, but it was just that type of game. People would pop up in positions and do things that you would never expect them to do. And of course, when Murdo striding forward, and we're saying, just keep it up right in the stand. And of course, he just checked inside, and he's hit a beauty right into all up, and I hit my head off the top of the dugout, you know. But that was a fantastic.
The final whistle was a funny one, because having been there, my memory after Murdo's goal, it's a total blur, because I don't even remember the final whistle going, because we were still celebrating. I think there was guys still celebrating the goal when the final whistle went.
We went around the ground, you know. I don't think we could believe it ourselves, really, you know. It took a while to sink in, you know.
What about the celebrations afterwards? I mean, Doyle's in the dressing room, right? And by all accounts, it took a while to drag him out because he was inconsolable.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, what was going through his mind when he's sitting in the dressing room hearing all these roars? Not just one or two roars, you know, there was five goals with him when he went off.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I know. Yeah, I mean, Johnny was distraught again, sent off. You know, at the time we thought he hadn't done anything, but a scratched black and white video kind of shows him having a wee nudge at Alex.
That's on YouTube,
you know?
And on. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah,
and
he definitely had a wee flick.
Alex was a good boot in the ribs.
So made the most of it, but you know, obviously he was gutted. You know, but you know that we managed to get it.
And here was a few the old players in the dressing room after it.
Well, come in, the place just was awash with former players that were there, mums and dads, people walking about half naked. And it's a great feeling, you know. Probably at 21 years of age.
Does he get any better than that?
You can half say, well, you know, that if it all ended tomorrow, it's been a great ride, sort of thing, you know. But it was just one
and
of those
then
fairy tales,
there was the holiday in Mallorca afterwards. That must have been an enjoyable experience.
That was a blur, to be honest. I didn't really drink at all, except maybe in the off season, you know, and a few shandies, but you know, that these small bottles of San Miguel, I think they call it. And they were pretty strong. Sitting in the sun, what you do, I think we were there for 7 days, but I can't remember too much. Except we're all well behaved, of course, you know.
So that moved us on to the next season, and with a decent run in the European Cup, and it took us to diverse places like Tirana and Dundalk and Madrid.
Tirana.
Tirana, we weren't allowed any, in fact, we were hardly allowed any pressmen in the Tirana.
I don't think there was any pressmen allowed.
I think it was only 25 in total, and that included the directors, the players, the kit men.
Yeah, and they had to chat with a plane to get out there, and we got off the plane and we got on this bus that looked as though it'd been there since World War II, you know. And we started going through, and we seen all the women were working in the fields, all dressed in black, all working in the fields. Mm-hmm. And when we got to the city, all the men were sitting about the streets. They weren't working at all.
But when were they not the graph?
That's all the graphs, you know, so might be too bad a place after all, you know. But and the accommodation was basic. Mm-hmm.
Of course, Danny's beard as well.
We thought that might be an issue, you know. But it wasn't an issue in the end. But we're happy to get in there. Mm. And you know, Billy said that they're very respectful people. They'll probably make no noise at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, about 3,000 or 4,000 turned up to watch his train the day before the game. Mm-hmm. And they clapped and were very polite and looked for autographs and all the usual stuff, and went out, and the next day it was an afternoon kickoff and it was red hot bacon. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, you know, the atmosphere won't be
what we're used to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we kicked off and Partizan had an attack and the ball went crossed over and the boys hit the crossbar and the whole place erupted, you know, and they all got behind them, they're up there. And they scored the 1-1 nothing. You know, and really we're just glad to get out of the place, really, you know. We're all fairly confident that we'd turn it around in Glasgow. But it was an experience, but not one of your most pleasant experiences.
Well, we did turn it around, but that wasn't even such difficulties either. Alan Steggan scored a spectacular own goal that night, and then George missed a penalty.
Yeah.
But we still won 4-1.
Yeah, went in there. I think once we get the one, Evan just flowed, you know.
They collapsed a bit.
They collapsed,
yeah. So then was Dundalk, and again, we were having a wee chat earlier about different things, and we'd sort of had they played well in the first game and won 3-2, so it meant that if we lost 1-0, we're out and away goals. And again, my recollection is listening to this grainy radio commentary Radio Erin or whatever they call it, and every time it went near the goal it sounded as if they were going to score. It was a horrible experience.
Yeah, so the game was, it was a tight game, it wasn't it was physically tough. They knew that one goal would put them through, you know, but I felt that we controlled the game reasonably well, but we still couldn't score. And while it was like that, there always the thought that if they get a lucky break, a free kick and a set piece, and that one, you're out. And with about 3 or 4 minutes to go, the bus down the left, and the winger fired a ball across the 6-yard box, and the boy came in at the back post. They just need to tap it into the back post. But whatever they done, whether he took his eye off the ball, whether it hit a bump, I don't know. It never ended up in the net. It somehow bounced over his foot, and we survived, and we went through to play Real Madrid. But that night at Dundalk was a bit special. There were people hanging from floodlights up there, climbing floodlights, and
it was an old-fashioned experience, wasn't it?
It was unbelievable. People travelled from all over Ireland, you know.
I think I recall Dundalk built temporary stands, which were, it was a fairly new concept in the days, and I think there'd be capacity almost get doubled through these temporary scaffoldings, if you like, you know, with seats in them.
You
know.
You could probably double that again with the people that were in the stadium and probably weren't accounted for, you know. The people, how did they get up on these on these pylons, and you know, and you know, health and safety would have a cardiac arrest these days, having a look at that, you know. But we get through it anyway, 0-0, and
then it was Madrid.
Were
you in the bench for the games?
I was in the bench on the second game in Madrid. Mm. I had an eye injury and I was out, and Doyle scored in Glasgow, and I think George scored the first one, didn't he? Mm-hmm. they played really well first half. We got to grips with the second half. And
but they end up, we could have won with more than two that week. So we could,
you know, and we're thinking, you know, we're confident going across there. The two goal lead would be enough, you know. And again, we had a great opportunity. I think George was through after about 3 or 4 minutes and his feet got mixed up.
That's another one that's in YouTube, if you, the whole game.
Is it?
And it's good quality stuff, I know. I couldn't bring myself to watch the whole thing because it still brings back sad memories. But I had a wee sort of 5 minute glimpse of it just to get the. Because we played in All Green that night.
That's right.
Really unusual strip to play in.
Yeah, and they scored right on half time. We thought it was a foul on Peter, to be honest. And you know, the fairness, we kind of we never performed second half. I think that's the only time that we looked in and kind of said, you know, we'd probably let ourselves down that 45 minutes. You know, Tommy Burns come on, almost changed the game for us. Tommy was outstanding on that afternoon, but we couldn't get the goal that we needed to get through. You know, as it happened, I think Madrid got battered the next
it did,
Hamburg,
people tend to forget that they played. Kevin Keegan was playing with Hamburg at the time, and Hamburg beat them 5-1 in Hamburg, and I think they got a draw in Madrid, and then Hamburg get beat before us in the final.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was us up with certainly needed, but you know, we're punching at our weight.
Yeah, definitely wrong, you know.
So the last game of the season. Well, I think we should touch upon the fact that it was a bit of a disappointment that year because we had a big lead in the league.
It slipped away.
And looking back, what went wrong there?
It's hard to say what went wrong. That
people point to Frank coming in and maybe unbalancing the team a wee bit.
I wouldn't say that. I think Frank took a bit of time to settle. You know, and that may well have been the case, you know, but I think from the management's point of view, they always have to look to strengthen the team. And Frank was a good player before he left St Mirren to go to Liverpool. So like, when they come back up, they found it hard to score the goals. You know, but I remember thinking that we'd lost a poor game. I think at
Dundee
was it
5-1?
And you know that. That was it.
They get relegated that season, and nobody could believe that result. It was a shocker.
Yeah, I know. I was playing in reserves that day, and you know, and
you weren't in the reserves for long after that result.
I was straight back again. And say, back in again. But we couldn't really put my finger on why it was slipping away. You know, Aberdeen had obviously had a good side. They came there. They came to Glasgow. And that was more or less a league decider.
They beat us twice in the space about 2 weeks, so they did. And we're in patch as well, which was a sore one.
You know, I think Strachan scored one and a couple of goals at the back post that were caught flat. But they were a good side, in fairness, you know, and obviously, you know, they lost the league. You know, with one game left really to sort it out, and that was the Rangers Cup final, you know.
So talking about the Cup final then, just to paint a picture for people that are listening, the centre back partnership in the days was Roddy McDonald and Tom McAdam, and maybe even Big Shuggy. So Shuggy left a few weeks before the Cup final, Roddy got injured, and then Tom McAdam in the game before the Cup final got a booking and got suspended. So we've literally no get a defence. So it would make sense to bring Roy Aitken from midfield into defence. And then Jim Casey was the guy who was originally earmarked to play alongside him.
That's right.
And then he goes and gets injured in training, and hey presto, you're the...
You're not the left, really.
you were it.
And fairness to Billy, I think it was in his head. On the Monday, after we'd lost the league, you know, I think we're back in and they say, look, we're going to have a go. We're going to need to make adjustments, you know. But on that Monday, he said to me, he said, look, you'll be playing, I just don't know where yet. John Doyle at the time had missed a few games through a heel injury. But John had declared himself fit, obviously, because it was Rangers. And fairness to him, like, you know, that he would be busting at playing Celtic Rangers games, you know. But I said, right, okay, I said, we're going to work with Jim Casey and Roy. And 4 defenders went with Billy and John, and Brian Scott took midfield players and attackers for some shooting. After 5 minutes, Scotty's got the call to come back up. Jim Casey's lying the 6 yard box. So Scotty's went up and you're still shooting away in it. And next thing I see Billy walk down the pitch at Celtic Park and calls me up and say, look, Jim Casey's got a bad ankle injury there, so we're going to need to rejig again. How do you fancy playing centre back? Is there any problems for you? I said, no, no, none whatsoever. I've played here a few times at centre back and had a lot of experience here when I was playing junior football. I said, so I've no problem there, you know. I said, but we'll need to do a bit of work, you know. So myself and Roy went and practiced on the Tuesday morning, heading. Tuesday afternoon, heading. Wednesday morning, heading.
Well, it's worth pointing out at this stage that Rangers were famous in the days for Derek Johnson was a renowned header there, but he was their centre forward. And Wee McLean, Tommy McLean, that became the Motherwell manager, he was a wonderful crosser there, boy. He had this habit of, you'll know better than me. He could hang it in the air, and it just that split second for the likes of Johnston and Jackson to go up. And speaking as a fan, we were terrified going into that game, because not because you were a bad player or Big Roy was a bad player, it was just the fact that we were worried how you would cope with, because Johnston was a big fella.
That was the main threat, you know. When you the skills of Cooper, you know, he was a danger. But as you rightly point out there, anything coming in the box, that Derek Johnson was going to be a huge worry for us, you know. But we went and worked on it, and right through until the Friday morning, we worked on the Friday morning, and it was just about then that I was beginning to, big worry was in front of me, and he was just standing, and I was running, attacking, and heading the ball. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday morning, let's see, Mill. And you know, I was getting into the knack, just getting
timing
your eye in and your timing of your jump, really, you know. And Big Billy had said to me, anything outside the box from Peter McCloy's kick outs or free kicks, said, go and challenge Derek Johnson. Anything inside the box, Roy, you go challenge, and Michael, you sweep up and just be careful where John McDonald is. And you know that was it, you know. I said to Peter, that's what Peter, just give me early shouts, you know, let us know what's happening. If you're coming for stuff, just let us all know, you know. Of course, Big Peter had this thing that would shout, keeper, then he would add, not getting there, so then we'd all scramble. so we didn't know what was happening. And sure enough, like, Rangers, late on in that game, Rangers have got a free kick. And we've all did well. Peter did well. Myself and Roy have coped fine. David Provence, outstanding. With a goal up, and Rangers get a free kick out on the right, and it gets played in. And I'm on the
penalty
spot.
That's what I'm talking about, the big hanging high boys. And it hung.
And I'm looking at it. And I'm waiting for the shout from Peter. And I said, I've got to go and deal with this. I've got to get up and head it. And next thing, I fell over with the ball. Peter's caught the ball. He's pinned my two arms to my
body. He's actually got his arms on you, but he's got the ball there.
Yeah, but what I'm looking at, the ball. And if I move my arms either way and hit the ball, it's a penalty kick. And I'm, I says, Peter, you're so-and-so, why don't you shout? Danny just said, off you go, you know. Well done. And Peter stood with the ball.
That was the final whistle. So it was great, because again, watching it on television, in later years, Peter's get the ball under his arms, he turns and he starts waving to the Celtic end, as if it's just like
dead casual,
calm and all that, you know what I mean? There was no excitement about me.
And that was one of his qualities, that, you know, that he would be calm in those situations, sometimes too calm. Peter had a great day that day. But there were a couple that he came for and never got as well, especially first half. I remember Derek Johnson beat him to one.
Any interest to you in any more drinks at all?
Coke, please, and
just iced water.
Ice water and a Coke,
thanks. Eric, you know, had caused a couple of problems early on in the game, you know. And Peter had come for a couple of balls and Derek had flicked him on and we could have scrambled around the 6-yard mark, but we got it clear, you know. But it was so laid back.
It was a very good game that day, but it was in the end. And it's a shame that it gets remembered for the riot rather than the quality of the football that they played.
It was a very open game.
It was a hot day. Do you remember the tracksuits we wore? They were more like a track jacket. It was a button-up thing with a big collar. Danny's is in a glass case as you go in the, is it the Kerrydale Suite restaurant at the Celtic end? And I never fail to go by that and smile because it brings back that day all comes back to you. Just because it was quite unique, you know, because it was a button-up and it was a sort of heavier material, almost like a jacket and pockets in it and that kind of thing.
I don't think I'll see it at the time. See it as a fashion icon any day soon.
Neil Mawkins' son has got two of them. I've met him fairly recently, and I was really taken with them. Obviously, nearly being a kit man or whatever, had access to these things and passed them on to his boy.
Yeah,
and he's got two, so it may actually be yours, you never know.
No, I think mine's down in my young brother's house, I'm sure. I'm sure the jersey's there.
Be a great one for keeping things. Some people do,
really,
some people don't.
I wasn't really. I've a scrapbook there that I never knew that my grandmother kept, and you know, that when I started compiling it stick it all together, then it was really from 1968 when I was playing with the Holy Family School. And so she had from 1968 and up until the cup final, I think. So I just kind of stopped then because, as you say, the 4-2 game in the cup final, you really don't think it's going to get any better, you know.
You know, I'll put you on a tab if you just want to.
That's fine.
There was another season to come as well, which was obviously high drama as well. When we won the league in 81.
Bill, if I can point something out to you at this stage, we played Aberdeen in during about New Year, and we got a doon, 4-1 we get beat.
4-1 again, yeah.
And, you know, I think Aberdeen were 5 points in front of us in the league. And I wouldn't have put your money in Celtic winning like that year. And then I don't know what happened, but something happened. Yeah. And for January onwards, we couldn't lose a game.
That's right. Yeah.
It was great.
Well, again, if I remember that 4-1 game at Pittodrie, we came into the dressing room in Monday morning. And for the exception of myself and David Provan, it lashed everybody because he got a phone call to say that the team was out in the town on a Saturday night after getting beat 4-1, which I think a few boys went to Archie's and had a couple of shandies, but nothing out the normal. But me and David decided to go home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just get straight in the car.
Because you're a distance away anyway, aren't you?
Yeah, distance away. So we were the blue-eyed boys of the class at the time, myself and
David.
So you
just went to the pub and green and never get caught?
never get caught, that's right. And the rest of the boys got lashed, you know. But as you say there are things in football that, you know, that once you get yourself into a position and you're doing well and everything's going right for you, it's hard to pinpoint why, you know. In the exact same bunch of players could, you know, look and struggle farther down the line, but you know, as you said, we went on a run again, you know. And at the start of that season we went to Ibrox and again with 10 men.
Yeah, 2 each game.
That was a 2-2 game, and we're 2 down, you know. We looked as though we're going to lose it, and we come back and we get the draw. That's like I end up in the hospital with a broken nose. That's why I look like this now, you know. But that was good because I really enjoyed that game, despite the broken nose. You know, we had no support there.
Don't understand that the Brimlin Road, as we know it now, had the terracing had been knocked down, they were in the process of building it.
Yeah.
And Rangers pulled a stroke because the previous season when the Copeland Road was getting built, they moved the games to Hampden. So there was maybe a 50-50 balance. Yeah. But of course, they pulled a stroke and Celtic fans were left with a wee tiny bit of the enclosure in the main stand and about, you know, 5,000 fans there and 35,000 Rangers fans.
Yeah, that was it. You know, as you say, between the tunnel and that little bit of the corner flag was all we had. and Roy gets sent off. I was right behind it, and as he went in, I said, I hope he gets that ball because he's high.
Oh.
And he never got it.
It was a bad one.
So. Yeah, and he was off, like, you know. Mm. And but we were in at half time, 0-0, and we came out and we kept battling away, and they went 2-0 up. But we kept going. Snedy got a goal. I had to go to the far mm-hmm. post and
flying
kept
header.
Going, mm-hmm. kept going, and I got a crack in my nose, and Kenny Watson was at caught me with his elbow, and it was an accident, of, mm-hmm. you know. And Brian Scott came on and said, "You're going nowhere tonight," went like that. And I said, "But your nose is broke, but you're okay to play on." So I'm fine to play on. Battled away, we get the second goal with 4 minutes to go, and we could have won the game.
Mm-hmm.
Late on, I think it was John Doyle. Had a shot that hit the side net, and if he pulled it back,
you may have got it.
I may have scored.
But that'd have been something,
was,
isn't it?
That'd be something that was. I never scored against Rangers in in the top team, you know.
You weren't prolific. I mean, that wasn't your game, really, was it?
Really, no. But you know that early on, I like getting the box to box if I could, you know. But my skills were definitely defensive. But, no doubt about
Murdo
that.
Tended to be the guy that got the attack.
Murdo were in, yeah. Mm. You know, with lots of good attack players, really. Mm. Midfield players, you know. Murdo, Tommy would get up there. Mm. David Proven and Roy, when they played in there as well, would be strong as well, you know.
So who'd have been the great characters in the dressing room in the days?
Well, I think, obviously, the Tommy Burns and John Doyle were two great lads, you know. They were sharp, they were funny, they were good people, essentially. But they had a laugh and a joke. But when it came to business time, it was business time.
They get down, yeah.
But I think the dressing room was almost like a perfect dressing room, you know.
Mm.
And I think in many ways it kind of set up the boys coming through, because when we're 79 and 80, you know, you've so many good players in the other dressing room, the reserve dressing room. Do you know, you'd Packy Bonner, where they come through there, Willie McStay, David Moyes, Mark Reid, Danny Craney, Charlie
McStay.
Nicholas, Paul McStay was another year back, so.
Danny Craney,
yeah. All fantastic.
There was a few other ones that didn't quite. I mean, John Halton had a really good reputation, but didn't quite.
Very quick, John,
didn't happen for him.
Yeah,
and there was a couple of them like that, you know, Jim Duffy.
Yeah, Jim Duffy.
Who in another era would have been a really good Celtic player.
Yeah, he went on to play at a real good level, Jim, you know. He'd just probably never get the break or the opportunity at the time there, you know. We'll probably maybe top heavy in those positions, like you say. Mm-hmm. Tom McAdam went back there.
Mm-hmm.
He done a job. Sugar was there. Roddy McDonald, Roy. I would go back there at times.
It was a bit stiff competition there.
But Jim was a very, very good defender. He played alongside me in the reserves quite a bit. You know, and we weren't the tallest, but not a lot would get by, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Jim had to move on, I think, for his own career as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing great now in management there. And he was a very, very good player. Good
if you take the 81 season, there was a big Roy was becoming famous for these charges up the park. So people used to read it in the papers, and they would say you can almost hear the bugle and but the big man just right through the centre.
Mm-hmm.
And what I noticed at the time I was at an age that I was taking more of a notice a positional sense, and you know what players do in the park. And there was times that Big Roy would run up, and it was noticeable. You would just tuck in behind. You know, it was obviously it was pre-worked, something you probably worked on in training. And I remember being quite impressed at the way that, you know, it was that even when Big Roy lost the ball, there wasn't a space behind him for teams to pick his off.
Yeah.
And you tucked in just to give him the space and to charge through.
Well, that was part of my role, really, just to make sure that I sat behind the ball. And if it did break down, then I could recover quickly, you know.
Mm.
You know, but it was also the license as well. If it was on, it wouldn't try and affect the game in the box. But, you know, as you rightly said, Murdo was good, Tommy Burton was good at that. David Brown would arrive at the back post. Great deliveries, David, from the right hand side of the pitch as well, you know. So when you've seen David get the ball, depending where you were, you know, that you would adjust yourself to say, well, can I get it in on the end of it, or do I sit back and just wait for the second ball and see what happens, you know. But my skills were mostly defensive. I left the creative stuff to the likes of Tommy and mud on there, really, you know. My strengths, I knew my strengths one. I wasn't going to hit 60 yard passes to people's feet every day of the week, you know. So.
It was two great all firm games at that period that I think we all recall fondly for being a boy. The first one was that it was snowing, we played Rangers, and again we couldn't believe it, we were nothing doing at half time. Yeah. Derek Johnson just beat you out across. Remember that? Right, yeah. Cooper swung it in.
And
he just got maybe a half a yard
that's
on
right,
you yeah, and, yeah. and flicked
that's
it by.
Right, that's right.
And the rest of the game, sorry, the rest of the half, we battered them.
That's right,
and
yeah.
You know, 1-0 did it at half time, you're thinking, so maybe it's going to be one of these days. Mm. And then in the second half, we destroyed them, absolutely destroyed
that's
them.
Right, yeah. So I think Charles scored twice, didn't he? Is that the same
Roy
game?
Got the famous one at the end of Randon, the touchline.
Scored, yeah.
And, but again, but when you look back, it could have been 5-1, 6-1 quite easily. You know,
that's right. Yeah, that was. Yeah, we played well that day as well. And
gave them a doing.
Yeah, I remember just before Roy broke away. I think it was Jim Bett had a shot. Tom McAdam kicked it off the line.
Sort of bicycle kick thing, wasn't it? Well, you know, some clearance.
So, yeah, that would have made it 2-2, but that would have been harsh on us, you know. But you know, the Rangers needed to score and kind of left themselves open. Big Roy, as you rightly say, was great. That exploit those opportunities, you know.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Charlie was just coming to the fore at the time. He became like he was the media darling.
Well, you know, Charlie came in and was scoring.
He was
goals,
not shy,
you know?
Was he?
No, that was part of his character. And you know, obviously. Great ability, but he could stick the ball in the net, you know. And you know, that I think he was so relieved after that game because he played in a game at Ibrox and I think Rangers won 3-0. And
he didn't need the justice.
And you know that people were kind of questioning, you know, you know, like, he's definitely a good player. You know, scored against the Kilmarnock and the Hearts, you know, but can he do it against Rangers? And I think that answered the questions
that
were there about him, you know. And he was thrilled with that game, you know.
The other one followed on after that, it was we all but won the league against Rangers at Ibrox when we beat them 1-0. It's all a bit gone because technically Aberdeen, if they won the last three games and we lost ours, 8-0, you know. Mathematically, we didn't win the league, but we as good as did it that day, and it was a brilliant sunny day. That's a great memory as well.
Yeah, I think that was the third last game of the season, is that right? And you know, it was another game we just slugged it out, you know.
But Billy made a tactical. I didn't think Billy was the greatest tactically at times, but he made a tactical move that day. He had Roddy McDonald and Tom McAdam as twin centre halves, with Roy just sweeping up behind them.
Yeah.
And we dropped a left back because Rangers at that time were playing with a right winger, so Billy's argument would have been no point having a left back if they've not got a right winger. And it worked perfectly. Yeah. We swapped to midfield and we took control.
That's right, yeah. I think Murdo pushed forward from there, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he sort of was always right, a left back. When we were defending, he tucked in. Reid, who was a regular at the time, he got dropped out it because Murdo was more an attacking player than Martin, and Billy knew that having the three centre backs, he didn't really need a left back.
And there was, like, having the boys the pitch here as well, you know. We knew that if we think of even just one chance, you know, that
we would take it,
really, you know. But the trick was really not to give them like too many opportunities, and that's exactly where the game panned out, you know. We won 1-0, Charlie scored, jigged his feet around and stuck the left foot in the far corner, you know. That was that game, so we'd won 1-0 then, but we had to go to Tannadice.
That was a great night as well.
That was a tough one as well, you know. Again, we won 3-2 as well, you know, so it was good.
Because we were unlucky the week before it, we played United in the replay at Hampden in the Cup, and was it you or Gowan and you that night? No, deflection. That was your fault, obviously. The ball maybe just Hegarty sort of got in the end,
and it was
clear if it were enough, I'm in enough view.
That's
but
right, yeah.
You know, it was a poxy goal to lose a semi final, you know.
So I get the credit for it anyway, right enough. And the papers gave me the credit for it, thanks very much for that. But yeah, as you say, so it hit my knee in a way,
to make up for it the next week. But it was great to go up to Tannadice and win it in a bit of style as well. It was a good performance.
Yeah, no, we played well that night. Thomas scored a great goal on the edge of the box.
And Tannadice had a great atmosphere at the time, you know, the celebrations at the end were tremendous. And
That's great, you know. And when you play in those games, you know, that was three huge games there, you know, in 79, 80, 81, towards the back end of the season, you know. And from my own personal point of view, it kind of proved the manager had trust in you.
Yeah.
You know that you go in and you could do a job. You know. The next week it might leave me out. You know.
I think what the fans liked at the time is that there was guys like yourself, Doyle, Tommy Burns, Big Roy, yeah. Celtic men, mm-hmm. right? And then you get guys like Davey and Murdo. And Tom McAdam, who gave their all, quickly became Celtic men, and you know everybody was in it together, and there was a great the fans. I've lamented recently that I don't think there's the same bond between the fans and the players now. You guys are what I would describe as touchable. Mm. I mean, I would stand outside Celtic Park and I would get your autographs,
yeah.
and you would take time to talk to the kids, that was part of the experience. And now, I'm sad to say, I think the players are becoming very distant for the team. Mm. For the fans.
Yeah, that may well be true. I mean, I remember a time we lost our semi-final in '79, the League Cup final. And it wasn't a great night because I get taken off with a wee occurrence of injury and Tommy Burns gets sent off. And the next day, we're sitting in the bath and Tommy said to me, "What are you doing this afternoon?" I said, "Not a lot." He said, "Come with me," he said, "follow me, park your car up." So I followed him up and he drove to his mother's house. I parked my car up, mm-hmm. I jumped in his car, he drove 5 minutes up to Glasgow Royal Hospital and went in there, he went up in the lift. And he opened the doors, and he was all, "We're here to see the kids." And he went in there, and he knew the name of the doctors, the nurses, mm-hmm. the patients in there as well. And we had a great hour and a half, mm. brilliant hour and a half in there. And as we came down, I said, "How often do you do that, Tommy?" He said, "Twice a week, maybe." "Well, it depends, you know." I says. Mm-hmm. It's only 5 minutes away from me. You know, he was such a caring guy. We come out there smiling mm-hmm. on our faces. Mm-hmm. And he said to me when he dropped me back off for my car again, he said, "You'll drive up the road a far happier person tomorrow morning, even though you've lost a cup final." And get taken off. He said, "Look, I get sent off. Lost a cup final." And I said, "So." He definitely had a way with people that was.
Is it true that when Davey was driving in and you were in the car, that Tommy would be going a Gallagher to training? I've heard Davey saying that before and he'd be late.
He used to blame his car though. Tommy used to blame his car all the time. Uh-huh. My car wouldn't start.
You can only get away with that so many things.
We would go and pick him up and he wouldn't be there, you know. But his car would be there. Mm-hmm. And he says, "If his car's broke down again, we'd sit there mm-hmm. waiting on him." He was away in a taxi, left us sitting there. We'd be late.
And then you're late,
yeah. And he'd go to the gaff a bit, but Conway and Provan being late was. Mm-hmm. Bang out of order.
Because there was a pal of my dad's, and he was in hospital for a serious operation, and he was sitting in the ward. This would have been maybe like late 70s. And he could see right down the ward, and he was bored out his nut, because obviously there's not a lot to do when you're recuperating. And he saw John Doyle coming in. And John Doyle walked along a ward and looked at every name in the top of the bed, and he says, "Doyle is staying in here for?" And he got right up to the end and he says, "You John?" And he went, "Aye, I'm John Doyle." He says, "I know who you are, what are you doing here?" He says, "I'm here to visit your family, sent a letter," and he said, "You were getting a serious operation." He says, "It's my turn it's my turn to come, how are you doing?" And he sat there for a full hour of the visit, and just talking about football and Celtic and life in general. Yeah. And you know, he never forgot that ever.
Yeah, no.
Meant John, a great deal to him.
John Doyle would volunteer for those things, you know. And he would say, "Who's coming with me?" Mm-hmm. "If you want to do that night."
You come.
It's not a bit, you know, definitely it was big-hearted boys in that dressing, mm-hmm. you know.
So after 81 and 82, you're settled in the squad and you know, you've played in all these big games. And it came as quite a shock in maybe October 82 when you moved on. Mm-hmm. And I actually remember Billy on the paper saying, "I don't have a big enough squad, I've got a good squad of players," but you know, he kept digging away that, you know, Desmond White was getting money and if he could just get a centre half in or a left back, you know, that'd be an ideal team. And then the next thing, you signed for Hibs. And I wrote a letter to the Celtic View complaining and saying that, what is the point of complaining about having a squad when you're letting one of the main men in the squad go? I have to say, the Celtic View obviously didn't print it, because they weren't for doing things like that in the days, even though I was only a boy. But so what happened there then when you departed?
Well, I think the emergence of Paul McStay was definitely a factor. I'd seen Paul's ability, and I thought he was going to be an outstanding player. And Billy had also signed Graham Sinclair.
That's right. He arrived just before it.
Graham Sinclair was more of a fullback, left back or right back. But he also did marking jobs in the middle of the pitch. You know, that I'd been doing for 2 or 3 years as well. You know. So I kind of looked and said, well, I'm going farther down the pecking order here. It was a tough move to leave Celtic.
Looking back now, do you regret it? There's a part of you that thinks I should have stayed and maybe battled it out a wee bit?
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. People make moves and they think it's the right thing to do at the time, as it happens.
But you forced it?
Not really, no. I wouldn't say that. I had a decision to make, As it happens, I didn't have a good time at Hibs. Couldn't get it together at all. Had a pelvis injury that was niggling away at me for 6-7 months or so. And when the opportunity to go to England came, I took it. I said, look, I'm going to make a fresh start down there. Hibs wouldn't have let me go if I was going to sign for a Premier League team in Scotland. So the arrangement was, that if you go way down and signing for Blackpool, then that was fine, So I spoke to 2 or 3 clubs, but I quite like Blackpool, I quite like the manager, I quite like the players that were there. And we got promotion that year. On the verge of, again, of getting a second promotion. We've got a few injuries and we didn't have the strength of the squad to cope with it, then I moved to Wrexham and had a year there, which was good. Again, we had European football, but it was a bit of an attraction. I went to Orient for a year. Again, it wasn't great. 1 or 2 injuries, and I moved to Ireland in 1988.
Cork.
And I love Cork. I'm still in Cork, to this day. I was with Cork for 5 years, player, assistant manager, coach.
You were in quite a reputation at one point in Ireland for coaching.
I was. I worked with the FAI for 17 years. And I took a year out last year. Took a year out. But I still think I've bits and pieces to offer yet,
So what were you doing at the moment then?
I'm still working part-time with the FAI on coach education. I'm doing a bit of scouting.
This is in Cork?
This is in Cork, yeah.
Are you looking to unearth the next Roy Keane?
Well, we're always looking, there's actually some good players around in Cork, and they've got a strong connection with Celtic. Liam Miller and Colin Healy.
Liam Miller was a disappointment. I thought he could really have been something.
Again, that he made choices that, looking back, that it might change, same as myself. But you've got to make these decisions and you live by them and you move on. Liam was a good player, Colin Healy was a good player. You have a couple of good lads there. And Fikra Kelleher, a centre back, and Owen O'Connell, centre back. I think currently in the under-19 team, I think Neil gave him a run last year.
That's right, game at the end of the season, didn't he?
There'll always be a player or two come from Cork. I enjoy Cork. It's a nice spot, and we've taken a few good players from here over to Cork there when I was involved with Cork City, and they did great for us. Mickey Mellon, Jeremy Cabe, Dylan Roach, did his all a turn. Jeremy Cabe stayed there for 2 years.
Jeremy Cabe was a good player, actually. Remember him with Clyde Bank and Hamilton was a good player.
We drew with Bayern Munich in the UEFA Cup, which was a great result, We drew 1-1 in Cork.
It used to be years ago, there was a Cork Hibs and a Cork Celtic. Did they amalgamate?
No, they both went bust. And Cork City emerged in 1984, and the Cork City still going today. They're getting stronger, they're building. I think the pathways there are stronger now for players to come through.
So in the League of Ireland, who's the team? Who's the standout?
Well, I think Dundalk, as we speak, Dundalk are probably up there. Cork have a lot of young players, good young players. that they may need another season before they go and compete seriously for the championship. But they're in second place at the moment.
Mm. And they have a summer league now, don't they?
They have a summer league now, that's right.
And has that been a bonus?
I think it's been a success in the fact that the game's on Friday nights.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they're played in reasonable pitches now. No clash with the GA, whereas like when I played, it was Sunday afternoon. It was like the clash with the Gaelic games, you know. So all that's been removed, you know, and they're definitely moving along. You know, the standards come up, I think, in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely coming up. You know, we've a bit to go.
Mm-hmm. Who was it? Pat Fenlon came to.
Pat played, I think, with every club in Dublin.
No, but who was he managing? But he went to Hibs. He was doing quite well, wasn't he?
I'm sure he was at Bohemians at the time. Yeah. You know, but Pat was a good player and he was a good manager. Probably looking at what happened to Hibs, he probably feels as though that he got a raw deal there.
You don't have any Irish grandparents around, do you?
I actually do.
Because it's a pity, you know, Jack Charlton was there a few years earlier.
Yeah,
you might have been.
Enough, yeah.
You might have been an internationalist.
Yeah, my grandfather was born in Roundstone in Galway, and he moved across here. So I possibly could have played for Ireland, but I don't think it was flagged up. Nobody.
They didn't really do that, did they?
Nah,
it's only when Big Jack came in that he started digging out birth certificates. Yeah, and
I was too old by then.
God knows what else.
You know, if it'd been 10 years earlier,
you never know.
So
looking back in your Celtic days, is there one particular highlight, or would you just bracket it all together as being one great ride?
I won a lottery, simple as that. I won a lottery. You know, I suppose I worked hard enough to get there, but up until I was 18 years of age, I don't think I was anything exceptional, but when I got the opportunity, I grabbed it with both hands, you know. I made a lot of sacrifices. Obviously, your social life, you've got to look at that. But, you know, I never smoked or drank. So it was probably the first drink I had was almost when we won the league and went to Maglev, And I can't remember having that.
And did you take an interest in the team's fortune still?
Absolutely, yeah.
Good.
I'm just really nervous of the new manager's in now, you know. That's a big call for
it is,
Peter to make.
It's quite adventurous as well.
It is adventurous, and you know, I think there'll be huge responsibility on his number two.
You should apply for it.
Maybe 10 years ago, I think. I'm pushing on now, Stevie. You know.
Well, all it means to say now is thanks very much for your time, mate. It's been a great trip down memory lane again, and thanks for the memories, because we're speaking as a schoolboy, that were happy days.
Yeah, you know, it was probably the best 5 years of my life, 4.5 years of my life, without a doubt, you know. And obviously with my dad had played there previously, that Celtic were in the blood, and they still are in the blood, you know. I keep an eye on them to see how they do, and my umbrella, my whole family are Celtic supporters. My brother, when he's around, he goes up and he keeps me informed just exactly what's going on, you know. So yeah, it's been a great ride, yeah.
No, best of luck for the future, mate.
Thanks very much, Stephen.
I hope you enjoyed that. Once again, another excellent podcast from St. Anthony. There'll be another podcast along soon. Meantime, enjoy the World Cup and see if you can name the two World Cup tunes that are in this podcast. That was St. Anthony with Mike Conroy, and this is me, Harry Breedy, saying goodnight. Goodnight.